Accession number 27266, Mr. Brian Keogh, Reel 2. Now, what happened after Belfast, though, then, when you completed your training?
When we treated in Belfast, it wasn't that quick an escape because we had were frightened of the IRA and that coming in and attacking us. So out in the main roads, just outside the premises sort of thing, it was a shaky, you didn't know when you'd be shot at or not. But it didn't really happen. But can I tell you one story about it? On Sunday, we could go into Belfast. That was a day off sort of thing. And we got into Belfast, and in the centre was nothing but a mass of tents filled with the Belfast ladies, made with cakes galore. So all we did was go into there, eat and drink, and we get a hymn, of course, because it was a Sunday. Then we go to the next one, feed up again. And honestly, we were like bacon pigs by the time we finished. We had to give up, couldn't eat anymore. But Belfast was a sort of funny place. That the whole square, there were no cars or anything, just these tents of civilians feeding the troops. And that was marvellous for us. But that's about all I can say. We skipped the religion sort of thing. We'd run for it, as the case may be. And then we could get them.
So these the ladies running this were of the Protestant community.
Yes, indeed.
So what happened next then?
Now I've got to go back to Belfast and what happened to me in Belfast. We did a bit more mountain training, believe it or not, in Belfast. Just general training, so that didn't matter to anything. Then we did military marching again, so that we could go on demonstration if we had to, showing us marching in the ranks. But that ended for some strange reason. I think the war was getting more serious at the time, and then we got the query, the statement, we are having to move you to Europe, and you'll go as fully equipped soldiers, and we want you to do your very best as you were trained to in Belfast.
How did you feel about being posted overseas? I mean, in yourself?
I didn't object at all, because that's what was my job was wanted, and I felt I was doing what I wanted to do. So I felt nothing at all. We couldn't get overseas straight away because there were U-boats in the channel.
Now, when was this? Do you know what month it
that
was?
That would have been straight 44, must have been 1944, mustn't it? I was 18 and a half then, but they didn't know that at the time. But it was the whole trained...
18 and a half would put it into 45.
45, was it? Yeah. Well, in that case, I was just one of the trainees in Belfast, because we all went. In other words, they wanted bodies. It didn't matter whether we could shoot a gun or not.
Now, where were you going to? Take us through the journey.
Yes. We sailed across to... oh, God, help me. Just across the river at... can I ask Mary?
No, there's no point.
It's the Belgium coast. We landed in the Belgium coast.
Antwerp. And what happened there?
We were marched down the road.
Ostend. Sorry,
Ostend. We marched down the main road, which was a seaside resort. All the houses were seaside houses. And our plan, we were instructed then to enter a house, any house you like, because that's where you'll be sleeping for some time to come. So I went with my Irish pal, and we went upstairs hoping to get a nice bedroom, but the other soldiers were smarter and nipped up ahead of us. So we found we had got a toilet upstairs. So we said, well, that's grand, because we could take the pipe and throw all that dirt down the pipe into the hall below and the landing below. So that was great. Then an officer came out, this is where I go against officers, and he got us all in line for training. And we walked along the seaside road, sands on one side, these houses on the other. And it was a piece of open land. He says, now follow me carefully, but don't run, just walk quietly. And we walked down this passageway. And we looked and we could see it was all mines on in this path to trap our troops. And how the officer thought that was a good thing. So we had to shout at him. We shouted, there is a sign, Achtung Minen. And he looked and says, oh my God, you shouldn't be in here. So we had to turn around and tiptoe out of the minefield onto the main road. And you've known how difficult it is to danger to walk through that sort of thing.
Did any of them go off?
None of them went off. Not one went off. And then we went out into the main road and he marched us down the main road. The other side had the sands. So my pal and I, this Irish chap, says, I'm fed up with this. And I said, so am I. So we crossed the road and hid down behind the sands and waited there till the troops came back. We could hear them walking, and as soon as the footsteps passed, we got in the back of them and followed them in. And that was our life for quite some time.
You weren't actually with the battalion yet, were you?
No, not with the battalion, no. That came shortly after that.
So anything else happened at the Ostend?
Yes, there was indeed. An officer took us through the town and out into sort of countryside with like a holiday resort type place, if I can put it that way. And the Arnhem had taken place then. I hope that fits in with you. And the Arnhem, we finally recovered from Arnhem and started to chase the Germans out, because they were making a run with the equipment to Germany.
Do you mean the Ardennes offensive, not Arnhem? Arnhem's where we attacked the Germans.
Yes, where you attacked the Germans. That's where I did that. But there came a time when we stopped, didn't we? And the Germans were escaping. Now, that is fact.
Yeah. Okay, tell us a story then.
Yes, we went to what we thought was Arnhem, but instructed to capture any Germans who were trying to escape from the battle, because they were being knocked out then, weren't they? The British had got back up into the top and were knocking the Germans out. And they were making a run with their equipment to get back to Germany. And our job was to kill the Germans.
Had you joined a battalion yet then?
I had joined the 7th Argyles. I was the only one.
Do you mean you were the only one?
Well, I was the only one in the 7th Argyles. It was a mixed regiment.
You mean you were the only Scotsman?
I was only Scot, but I was only Scot that was in the, for some reason, ex the 7th Argyles. There wasn't another 7th Argyle with me. My army life was one of myself, I can assure you.
So you joined the 7th Argyle and Southern Highlanders?
Yes, to join the regiment, but it didn't happen that way.
So what happened when you were sent forward?
We went down inland, and at that time, believe it or not, we had the very first, I think I've said it in my note to your body, about the aircraft coming over there. It's certainly in my story about the plane coming across.
It's not on your notes here. But
no, it was in the letter, the story I put in, the form. It should give you that this plane was coming over, and it was the first, not bombers or anything like that, it was the first planes which were, forgive my poor memory.
It's all right.
It was the first planes that came across very shallow in the sky, very fast. Oh dear.
Snooker.
must have been slowly one of the kind then.
Dive bombers?
They weren't dive bombers. They were just like fighters, but very slim fighters flying through the air, and they had a name.
Our, doesn't matter.
Our planes had it. I'll see if I can think it. I might see you before you have to do it. I'll see if I can find it. I haven't looked for anything because I never kept records. I didn't have a diary.
So what happened? You saw a low-flying aircraft?
Yes, the
aircraft. German aircraft?
It was a German aircraft. And our officer said, have a look at that. That's the first you'll have seen of those, but you will see more of that type of aircraft. Then we had to get...
And what happened with this aircraft?
It just flew on and disappeared. Obviously, it was they couldn't lose the plane, so there was no shooting or anything, and we had no guns to shoot it up with aeroplanes, but we had the steep Dutch road, which went down to the path below, sort of thing, and we were told to get down there. We didn't want to because it was we didn't want to have our feet blown off. But eventually he took us round a slight junction and we went down there where we were to sleep the night. So we dug a duvet just for the two of us, as the rest did. And it was at that thing I woke up in the morning frightened to death because a tank had come up, but it was one of our tanks. And it came up and crossed over our duvet where we were supposed to be sleeping. And it got its guns sticking out like that. You've no idea how frightened we were with that. But, on the other hand, the chap came out of the planes and we realised it was a tank. And we realised it was our tank, so we had no problems. But it was quite exciting while it lasted. But really, it was a funny thing. We were being taken from sort of field to field to give people stories, like the press, if you know what I mean. And it was in that field there I was the chap got out his book and said, Kyo, he says, you're 18 and a half. I said, I have no idea, I don't know what my age is, but you looked at my army records and he says you're 18 and a half today, so you are our youngest soldier. But I mean, people lied about their age in those days. It didn't mean anything. It didn't mean anything to me, except I was rather pleased to be told I was the younger soldier in Europe at that time. But there must have been others.
Yeah.
Or why they bothered, I don't know.
What were you doing with the battalion? I mean,
we were doing next to nothing. It seems rubbish. But what we did do eventually, once our units got formed, with me and my Argyles and all the others, our job then was to move into Germany, which was all the little housing estates and any houses, whatever purpose, big or small, or groups of houses, and our job was to clear them out, make sure whether any Germans in, to take them prisoner, or if anybody troubled, just to shoot them. And that was a nasty job because they had corn in sacks and you didn't know whether they were Germans hiding in those sacks. And I was so frightened what I did with my rifle. I've got my bayonet in it. I used to just poke my bayonet into the sack. But I thought it was safer that way. But we had civilians upstairs, so they had to be taken down and taken away to civilian places. And any soldiers were taken away. This is one thing I want to emphasise. People say about fighting the Germans and the battle here and the battle there and what they did and what they didn't. I think it was a load of bunking because the Germans had no ammunition at that time. They didn't shoot at us. No machine guns. They hadn't got any machine guns up at it. No pilots bombing us doing anything. So really, they were just people. And when we went out into the open where they were, the one job was to surrender. It's all they wanted to do. You must have heard that, and it was perfectly true. And what we did, we have a little group, we used to take them down to the prisoners of war camps. We were not involved any further than that. So we weren't fighting a war, except once. And that was the...
What about this business about you and the mortars? Has that happened yet, or was that happening later? Because you were rather isolated. Tell us that.
Oh, with the motorcycle. No, I haven't mentioned that at all, have I?
Was that earlier or later?
No, it's after now, starting now.
Okay, so sorry, I've gone out of there. You take what's next?
I understand. I think you're marvellous trying to get any sense out of me. But anyway, this mortar business was funny because I had to carry, at least a stone and a half on one mortar, heavier on the other. And I was only 18, don't forget. And the weight was too heavy for me. I couldn't do it. So I said to Irish Bill, what did you do with your smoke bombs? And he said, I just chucked them away. Nobody wanted them. When did you fire one? I said, I haven't fired one because nobody's asked me to. He says, well, nobody's caring. So I just chucked mine away. So I carried on walking by myself in Germany.
Hey, you haven't explained why you were walking by yourself yet.
Oh, sorry. The reason I was... we were all walking through the fields into the German part where we had not yet been attacked. And the officer said, now you've got to be careful, men, because there are Germans ahead and they might be shooting at you, so be prepared to reply, sort of thing. So I was walking along and there was a kerfuffling. Then I was called to go and see the officer, which I did. And he says, Kyo, the men don't want you with them. I said, why? I could kill as good as anybody. He said, you've got mortar bombs in there and they're frightened to death. If the Germans fire on one of those, they'll get blown to bits. You'll get blown to bits. We'll all get blown to bits. So please, will you please go by yourself through this bit of the war and we'll make sure you get food and we'll look after you. We'll get in touch with you, or you perhaps will be able to get in touch with us to see what's happening. But we'll have to leave it like that until we've organised something to get you back in the group to be with everybody once again. So that was it. I went by myself, carrying my two cases of mortar bombs.
What about the mortar? Who was carrying that?
I was carrying the mortar. It was done by this Irish chap, sorry. It was the Irish chap carried that. And he was back with the unit, so he was all right. He didn't worry. He just took these units, and nobody seemed to bother. The war was not really a war. It wasn't...
So they didn't worry about him because he wasn't carrying any bombs?
That's right. Well, it was only me because of my bombs.
But the mortar wouldn't have been much use without the bombs.
That's right. Nobody cared. In fact, why
were they worried? I mean, if no one was shooting at you, why were they worried? Was it shoe mines they were worried about? Or what was it? Do you see what I mean?
Soldiers who knew they were going to be German troops. And that was enough for them. They would have guns. They didn't care what type of guns. They didn't know.
But why were they worried about you being with them? I mean, you've got this bit about shoe mines in your notes.
Oh, well... That's another story, because there was a lot of shoe mines in the fields and we lost a lot of our men with their feet being blown off. And that was real nasty, and nobody liked crushing the fields till we got through the clear bit. But
why did that mean you had to be isolated?
Oh, it was isolated because they thought if the Germans fired, because they knew all about their machine guns and the fire and all that sort of thing, they thought if they fired and hit me, it would blow up my high explosive, and that could affect them if I was with them.
So it was nothing to do with the shoe mines?
No, nothing to do with the shoe mines.
You say it was the reason partly due to shoe mines?
No, it was nothing to do with shoe mines. That was just walking through the fields. That was a nasty situation.
So what happened when you were on your own then?
Well, that's a very difficult question to ask, because if you were in Germany... Lovely fields, lovely trees and everything, and you're walking by yourself and you come to a stream, which is from Holland sort of thing, streams and rivers, that sort of thing. And I know our troops had gone through, I could see them in the distance which way they were going, so I wasn't really out of touch, but I wasn't with them. And I had to cross these rivers, get my shoes and socks wet and all that sort of thing. I wasn't very happy about that. But then I carried on, then I got to, because I'm not really daft, though you may think so, I could see Germany as it was, and to me it was like being on my holidays. I could see the trees, I couldn't see any Germans at that time, and it was no problem for me. Then eventually I would catch up in our unit when I would get the news. I might get a meal, but not very often. And I got my answer in my book about how I fed, and that was marvellous. Because the troops wanted me to get some hen's eggs. Well, I was a Glasgow man, not a farmer's man sort of thing. I think the first time was stones, you know, all that junk. But I was walking through the fields. My man, the Irishman, didn't come in touch with me because he didn't know where he was. So how he could tell me where to go for a meal, I don't know. And I walked out into this field where there's some chickens. So I went to grab a chicken. I thought that might be a help to get eggs or something, or the troops might be glad to do that. But as I was doing that, I was chasing these chickens, and they were running like old fury, and I was running like old fury to at least catch one. And the funny thing, there was a set of troops up on the left-hand side on a wall, and they were roaring with laughter, seeing me doing what was so stupid. But they saw me, they got in touch with me and said, "Come over here, have you had a meal?" And I said, "No." And it was Canadian troops, and they were the best I've ever met in my life. They took me over and fed me and got me to go and feed every day after that. They're brilliant. Then they went and found me a chicken to take back and a couple of eggs. So I went back to our troops and they were delighted with me for that. But it was the only time I did it. I said, "I'm not doing this again." And I think that the troops have just enjoyed laughing at me so much that they were just kindly natured. So a great thing. I'm not sure about this. You can't quote this, but Gough was nearby, and that was an awful battle, as you know. And I thought the Canadians had gone into Gough, but somehow I haven't read that yet, so I don't know whether I'm right. I've got to get books out of the library and see.
Any other stories of this time that you remember?
Let me think then. Oh yes, we went to the crossing of the Rhine. We went in trucks up to there, and that wasn't the Canadians; that was just our British group.
And what do you remember of crossing the Rhine?
The whole thing, because I did the whole thing. So what I say is exactly what I saw. We had lorries take us up to the river, which was the first thing, and put us in boats. I've got plenty of pictures of them in my albums over there. But they put us into the boats, and we had to be armed with our guns ready to be used, not just looked at. And we crossed over to the Rhine, where the Germans were still entrenched. Now, we said we crossed the Rhine first, but we didn't. It was the Americans that crossed the Rhine first. So we could say we were second at best. And we crossed the Rhine with our officers and all our other ranks with our guns. We went on land. Crossing the Rhine was no problem. We had no attack from the Germans at all on our boats. So it was a piece of cake to cross the Rhine, get aboard land, find the German troops on the other side, then get our guns out and blast them to hell as fast as we could. And then we got the instruction to get back on the boat as they'd done what they wanted, and took us back to the land, and then we went back to our billets. I've got a funny story I can tell you.
Yes, okay.
You've heard of us being in lorries, but basically we walked everywhere, and it was hard work. And my feet were getting blistered, as you can well imagine what it was like. So I said to our officer, "What can I do about my feet? I can hardly walk, it's so painful." He says, "There's a Red Cross up the road. Go and see, they'll put you right." So as I walked up the road, on the left-hand side, there was a huge building, and it had the Red Cross signs. and I couldn't see one on the other side of the road where I should have gone, and so therefore I went up the path and knocked at this big door of this huge building, and this woman brought me in. She was a German, big, her equipment was round her, and she'd got everything there. And she says, "Was ist los?" Because my German's getting good now by then. And I pointed to my feet, and she says, "Come in, come in." So I went into this building and sat down. She took off my shoes, big fattish woman, but she was a nurse of sorts, or Red Cross or something, and she fixed my feet.
Was this a German aid post or hospital? Or
Well, it was now a German army hospital, but I didn't know. To me, it was just a German hospital. And to me, that was as good as the Red Cross. So I went in, and she came out, and she says, "That is very bad," she says, and she fixed my feet on the spot. I had, sitting say, here, I'd left my rifle against the wall there, not thinking, no sense at all. But she did a lovely job of my feet. She says, "This is good," she said. "Come back tomorrow if still bad." "Oh," I said, "thank you very much. I am very kind." She says, "I shall see you out of the door." And I looked up, and there at the top was a circle of the building, which was full of German troops, German wounded. It was a German hospital. And they were all up on the top, looking down at me. My rifle was stuck in the wall over there. So I did what any normal person would do. I opened that front door and fled. But it's she did a smashing job. I didn't have to go back. My feet were super. But that was quite a funny story, particularly the German troops and that.